handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebeck.com. And I suppose everybody's already made their decisions. You've picked out all 14 winners. Well, maybe two or three winners. After we got off the air yesterday, of course, they filled out the turf? We were on the turf at that point. And then they gave the classic, which we knew. We knew who was going in the classic. But there's a lot of intrigue already, less than 24 hours after the pre-entered fields. The decisions of a few horses really will weigh, and the surprising onslaught of O'Brien horses after every report had him with a fairly set group of horses, and virtually with every package that was unwrapped, there was more O'Brien runners than expected. And it didn't take long this morning for a few rumors and considerations, particularly associated with O'Brien, to materialize. And I don't want to set off a rumor mongering, but like I said to John White yesterday, just because they pre-enter doesn't mean that O'Brien's bringing everybody. And that part really key. And certain domestic interests are weighing their options. A horse like Mississippi, for instance, who's cross-entered in the turf and the filly and mare turf. And from every indication, Grand Motion seriously considering the turf for Mississippi. O'Brien adding Mount Everest to the turf considerations to go with Anthony Van Dyke. Magical was cross-entered, as indicated, in the turf and the filly and mare turf, and the initial post-Champions Day lean was that she was going to run in the filly and mare turf. And she's a linchpin, and we'll see what's happening with Magical. Fleeting, as we discussed yesterday, and then O'Brien added Just Wonderful, who, of course, has already made stateside visits. She's cross-entered in the mile and the filly and mare turf. Iridessa for Joseph O'Brien as well, mile and filly and mare turf. So there's a number of horses also that are going to get in that right now you're looking at as being, outside as part of the not selected into the field. Sedois is certainly going to run because Bricks and Mortar is going to run in the turf, and that opens up a slot for Sedois. So even though O'Meara's French Bread is outside, he's going to get in. The baby races are a little more crazy, and the juvenile turf sprint, which was the first announced race, 26 entered, 26. And there's some horses, and particularly Miss J. McKay, that we were kind of tracking that looks hard-pressed to get in. And sitting third on the not selected. O'Brien has got, Joseph has got Alligator Alley, the Saddler, Encoder, and Encoder with the opportunity to run in the juvenile turf. So there might be one slot to open up in the sprint. That field ended up with more international participants than had been originally discussed. And that includes Tom Dascom with Dr. Simpson and Dreamshot from James Tate. There's a couple that kind of jumped in at the quarter pole. And we were wondering about that, were there going to be more? The fields in general and the number of entrants down slightly, but actually in line, down from last year in total entered, but in line with the entries at Del Mar 2 years ago. You know, part of it is going out west. I'm sure that people want to immediately say it's concerns over the, you know, over for the main track and so on and so forth, but it isn't. That's a one-dimensional thought. We're going to talk to Dick Powell in hour one. We've got some Hong Kong to do with Dick, but he's also going to touch on particularly the Saturday turf horses. I want Dick to offer a bit of a primer on how he approaches the various preps internationally, you know, coming in. So we'll do a little turf, filly and mare turf and mile with Dick and get his perspective. Nick Tamaro is going to do a walkthrough with us, kind of do some top line matchup and initial reaction, gut level field glances. We'll look at the race orders as well. I sent that out, and that was immediately popular yesterday. People wanting to, you know, just get a feel for how they're going to go, and I'll discuss it in a second. The betting menu as well, and what races are linked, pick fours, pick fives, etc. We'll do a lot of that, and I want to give you one question immediately. People were wondering about the potential carryovers and force out, etc. The pick six Saturday, the late pick five, and the jackpot super high fives that they're going to run, they all have a mandatory pay with the classic, with the nightcap on Saturday. There's no carrying anything into Sunday. And, you know, there had been years where that had been a source of contention and discussion, but everything paid out on Saturday. The minimums and so forth. The pick six is $1, and you got 10-cent supers, 50-cent tries, pick threes, pick fours, pick five, jackpot high five, all 50-cent. There'll be those head-to-heads. There'll be some of those head-to-head concepts. Well, I'm sure we'll talk to Paul Matisse in the next week leading in. Paul's been, you know, part of the group that's just trying to create some alternative wagering ideas. So we'll get to everything. All right. We got exactly what? We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 days, 5, 6, 7 days, 21 hours to make sense of all of this. And we'll do it today beyond Nick and Dick in hour one. Tony Black, we'll check in with Tony. Get some thoughts from Tony. Steve Haskin. And Steve is already. Steve must have been up. I'm sure he was up. He's not much of a sleeper, but I got early missives from Steve Haskin. I can tell he's excited. And we didn't get to Seth yesterday because we were still making up time with Jeremy and John White. and also Rich Eng as well. So got a lot of kind of Breeders' Cup conversation. Do also want to get a little of the important enough spots from yesterday covered. Can actually quickly dive into that. And that maiden race I mentioned yesterday, the fifth in particular at Belmont, ended up going to Bellavia, the relative of Mattoli. And we think that looking at the field, you feel like this is a potentially important race. So it didn't. It got a 77 buyer, and it's respectable enough. Bellavia, the honor code for LaPenta and Sal Cumin and a host of others, Fred Rosen, Wonder Stables, Gallo Stables, and our friend Lee Einsiedler mentioned Lee's horse, Secret Rules, making a very nice second start. Got beat a couple lengths in there. Ran well. Default Rate, the Klarovich, and the first-time starter for Jane Lyon. And Bill Mott was fourth in here. They were... Moon Over Miami was well back. But keep an eye on this race. The disappointment in here to a major degree was the Sabotnik runner with Brad Cox, 16 tons. Really just trailed throughout, kind of, just never really engaged. And of course, they were off the turf yesterday, back on the turf today. So that's good news. That because it did, those three races, it kind of gummed up the late action. And at Keeneland, some of those races we talked about, that turf sprint, it was the Arno Delacour for our friend Ed Seltzer and Bev Anderson, one of their homebreds, an Into Mischief filly, Lucretia. Just went off favorite over Seguin. But controlled things throughout. And that first-time starter, Cherie DeVoe can't win with every first-time starter. But Veruca, she was salty. Okay, I'll give you a second to recover from that awful... No sooner did Jeremy Plonk say Eddie Keneally was winless, that Eddie pops with Holiday Storm. I like Holiday Storm. Stone, excuse me. For the Hills, Jim and Susan Hill. That was that fun race that, Bulletin, I don't know. Bulletin popped and stopped, as they say, and plummeted in the back of the field as the 2-1 favorite. And the horse of Ian Wilkes won that allowance done deal that we brought up the other day with him. So good, nice day of racing, and today should be good as well. Weather has gotten gorgeous. I mean, just should be great. The weekend racing as well. Saturday's cards. You got the closing day feature, the Fayette at Keeneland. There's a terrific, holy cow, a terrific Saturday card at Belmont for like an off Saturday before Breeders' Cup week. The return of Maximum Security, who drew inside. Not that we're worried that he wouldn't go to the lead, but the Bold Ruler came up very good. And also the Awad for the 2-year-olds. It's a really good card Saturday at Belmont. Let's take a break. Dick Powell starts it off. A lot of Breeders' Cup. Nick Tamaro, Tony, Steve Haskin, Seth Barrow, Rich Eng. Sirius XM at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't wait. With 14 challenging Breeders' Cup races, 5 Friday, November 1st and 9 Saturday, November 2nd, you've got to be ready. Kickstart your handicapping mojo with ExpressBet's free Breeders' Cup wager guide. Available online at ExpressBet.com beginning Friday, October 25th. Get analysis, selections, price plays, and $100 wagering strategies for every Breeders' Cup race from expert handicappers and broadcasters. Plus, oodles of informative stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. XBTV's Jeff Siegel, At the Races radio host Steve Bick, NBC Sports analyst Nick Luck, and multiple Eclipse Award winner Dick Girardi anchor a powerful team of guide experts. NBC Sports analyst Eddie Olchek and retired sportscaster Brent Musburger of VSiN will contribute to a revised guide version available beginning Thursday, October 31st. Go to ExpressBet.com now. Open an account, get the free guide, and play Breeders' Cup.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Welcome on, everybody, and let's get together tonight. I got some money in my jeans, and I'm really gonna spend it right. Well, I've been doing my homework all the week along, and now the house is empty and my folks are gone. Woo, come on, everybody.
We're back in the races, coming up on 20 into hour one and day three yesterday of the October yearling sale. Nice $410,000 Uncle Mo led the pack. Mike Ryan scooped up this one from Indian Creek, and he also had a filly for 400. Those were the two top knockdowns. Run Happy filly to Speedway Stables, and Woods Edge consigned American Pharaoh colt to the Cassie team, $385,000. Then a Spitestown Frankie Brothers for Starlight, $300,000 for a colt, and $250,000 for a Factor, also a colt, Jerry Hollendorfer. And so on. Look at that. Go Sapper Philly, Patrice Miller, $245,000 out of Pianist. You remember Pianist? Pianist was Dick Powell's joining us. There is the the long running joke, the long running moniker that gets hung on horses. Fastest horse in the world, Dick. whenever there's a big rumored first-time starter, two-year-old, and Pianist was one of those, was going to be the fastest horse in the world, and she was okay. Good morning.
That's going back a ways. The one I remember, and he did turn out to be blazing fast, was Rodeo. He was, by Gone West, and they tried to start him up here, and he got scratched going to the gate. And he just worked brilliantly, but he was so fast, and he was very unsound. But he ran a gigantic number his first time out. I mean, just huge. And then the wheels started coming off, and he actually stood at stud and had a nice pedigree. But he was the one that was just pouted and pouted. And then you never, you know, he didn't go right to a race because they had to get him sound, and they scratched him at the gate up here. I think he broke his maiden back at Belmont, but that was the one I remember. Rodeo.
I like it. Well, that was Stan Huff.
I believe so.
In fact, here he is. He was a Maryland bred, actually. Richard Golden. How about that? Richard Golden bred him. And Mrs. Oxenberg, Beatrice Oxenberg, purchased, made four starts. And you're 100% right. Made his debut at Belmont the first week of the meet, September 7th, 97, and won at First Asking. They tried him in the Futurity, and then it kind of went sideways, and he showed up at Saratoga the next summer, tried a couple of allowances, and was retired.
Yeah.
Well, the fastest horse in the world. Andy always pulls that out. That's one of those classics. Dick, we got plenty to do, and we wrapped up, of course, last week at Presque Isle, and the HBPA closed things out. They really did have a terrific meet, and I was pleased. Of course, Mike Trombetta for his wife Marie won the Mark McDermott, and then that Darcy May that you touted, and we got a nice price on Darcy May last Thursday.
Yeah, she got the trip. There were two horses far in front. She sat like third in behind and then made the move, and then a lot of traffic behind her. So she was able to get a little bit of separation, and yeah, she pulled it off. So also crazy, not crazy odds drop. And she was, I think when I bet her, she was 14. Then she went to 11, then 8, 7. And that, I don't let that bother me, because those are just corrections. It shouldn't have been 14. So everyone thinks, oh, 14, I would have grabbed it. Yeah, I would have bought Microsoft at $50 if I had to do it all. Over there.
That's a good line.
Well, you ever hear that? It's called psychic income. You buy a stock for 100, it goes to 300. You don't sell, it drops to 200. And in your mind, instead of making $100 from 100 to 200, you lost $100 because you should have sold it at 300, and instead you sold it at 200. So you lost $100 in psychic income. I'm like, no, you won $100. So be happy.
Now that's also, yeah, that's the horse player mentality without a doubt. Yeah, I won, but I could have won so much more. Well, that's why we say when you have the opportunity and you have an opinion that is strong, and you know, for you, and whether the horse wins or doesn't is sort of immaterial. But when you've got a strong opinion, you feel strongly, bet accordingly. You know, you don't, when you're right, you want to get paid, and that kind of fits into that mentality, that theme. Dick, let's turn quickly to the Hong Kong action, and we got a bit of an upset to talk about there, but I then want to morph into some Breeders' Cup discussion.
Yeah, Sunday, top 10, Beauty Generation was making his second start of the year. Now, the first start was Out of This World, track record for 1,500 meters, just looked great. Now, came back 3 weeks later, just didn't fire. Well, there were two speed boom horses in front. He was on the inside behind him, and one of the riders pulled up next to him. So he's kind of in a box, but he was never impeded. But I don't think he was striding the way he wanted to. When they turned home, he tipped out. And then when he tipped out, he didn't have that explosive kick. He still had a good kick, but he just didn't have that explosion in the stretch. And he wound up getting upset at odds on. He went off $1.30, which in international racing, that's going to pay $2.60. So that's really like our version of 3 to 10, 0.3 instead of 1.3. So he was upset at big price. There are really interesting comments in the chart from Zach Purton, who was questioned by the stewards. He said the response wasn't there. You know, he described the trip. Said he was disappointed, but I think it's more just a function of that first race back was so good. And he might have regressed a little bit. So now he'll go on to the Hong Kong Mile in the early November, and then he will be in the Longines Mile on December 8th, and I don't know if you want me to touch on that now, but they announced their early entries for the international races coming up in December, and they have 25, 41, 63, 100 group or grade one winners entered in the four races. I mean, they just have unbelievable international fields coming up. And Beauty Generation will be one of the favorites, but we'll see if he can bounce back in the next race going a mile. And the good thing with him is, and he was given crazy weight for the two horses that finished ahead of him when he goes to the international races. They're not handicap races, so they're going to have to carry the same weight as him. But he was quite a shocking upset that night. And as was the whole card, there were 10 races, only one favorite won. That was in race 9. And a lot of big prices, 40-1 shot. It's just kind of not, I shouldn't call it chaotic. It's a lot. Most of the horses were between 4-1 and 10-1. So you had a lot of good solid single-digit winners, 15, 16, 9, 20, 16, 40, and then the 40-1 shot. So it was a nice mix. Vincent Ho had 3 winners on Sunday. Grant Van Niekerk had 2. Zhao and Zach had a winner each. And Ricky Yu has been red hot lately. He had 2 on Sunday. And then Ricky came back yesterday at Happy Valley, and he had 2 more wins. So Ricky Yu was lighting it up with the trainers. Happy Valley yesterday, Steve. Race 4, there was a horse named Playa del Puente. Now, I remember I liked him when he made his Hong Kong debut. But then I did a little more research because, you know, things get caught in the back of your mind. Well, he won the Patent Stakes last year as one of those Road to the Kentucky Derby European races on the synthetic track at Dundalk in Ireland. So he won that. He beat Aidan O'Brien's odds-on favorite, Western Australia, who came back to be group placed, you know, the rest of the year. So Playa del Puente is racing in Hong Kong now. Yesterday he drew the rail going 16:50, just around a mile, and Marrera put him on the lead and just got away with a criminal first quarter. And then that was it. He just jogged wide to wide. Looked very good. His rating is already in the 80s, so after that race, he'll be high 80s. He'll probably pick up 6 points. And he looks like stakes quality, but he's already a listed stakes winner on synthetic and still pretty lightly raced. So he just looks like the type of horse that fits the Hong Kong program perfectly. So he just dominated and paid $5.40. I checked the prices before I went to bed and made the bet, knowing that 8:15 post time, I'm getting my granddaughter ready for school and stuff, so I could get distracted. So I made the bet at night and paid a very square price. So that was interesting yesterday. Playa del Puente looks like a horse with a nice future for Danny Shum and Joe Marrera. Yesterday, Albert Sano had 2 winners in the riders. Joe Marrera had 2. Zach had 1. And then Chris So had 2, and as I said, Ricky Yu had 2, so money's starting to get spread out a little bit. 4 favorites won yesterday, but at the end of the card, we had some crazy action. Race number, race number 7, I think it was, because there were 9 races yesterday. We had a 15-1 shot win, and the second horse paid $159 to play. I mean, to win. And a second. So the Quinella comes back, you know, like $1,200 for a Quinella. I mean, just crazy stuff. And then the last race, I'm watching the last race, and I don't know, after I had that winner, it's funny how your mind works, because I had a front-end winner racing on the inside. So the next two-turn races, I had horses who had some tactical speed that drew inside, and I'm thinking, oh, this is perfect. Well, they got perfect trips, and they got swamped on the outside by the wide closes. So in race 5, there was a real scramble for the lead in the stretch, and a 51-1 shot, Speedy King wins it by 0.01 seconds over our man Matthew Kuhn at 42-1.
Jesus.
Owen's horse was flying, just missed, you know, obviously, a nose loss. So the 51-1 and the 42-1 combined for about $1,000 Quinella in race number 9 at Happy Valley yesterday. I mean, just crazy stuff.
That's why it appeals. That's why you know, for those that you know, dive in and latch on and you know and have the sleeping habits that that can fit. It you know, there's the pool size and you know the, just some of the results that if you're able to you know catch the wave. So that's why. That's why it's as popular as it is.
And normally, you don't get that many long shots on the front end. They're usually closes and races that have kind of fallen apart. So you know, I'm not saying you could red boy these type horses, but there is a little bit of logic if they can get clear on the outside and get an unimpeded one run. Now, the winner of the last race came up the rail, Speedy King, and that's a little bit unusual, you know, but he had so much room that there was never tight quarters. But it just seems like when they turn for home, and it's Happy Valley's less than 400 meters turning for home, so it's a normal stretch, but it's not a long stretch by any means. But it just seems like the outside horses just gather up that momentum. You see that in Australia with those one-turn sprints like the Everest and stuff. Those horses are building momentum, even losing ground. They're better off just doing that and not having anyone ever get in their way. And so we saw that yesterday in the last race, and two of the last three races, $1,000-plus Cornellos in Happy Valley yesterday. So as of yesterday, Jal Marrera has 27 wins, Jack Purton 20, Karis Teton 15, Danny Shum has 14 winners. And the trainer standing, Ricky Yu is now 12 because he's had four the last two race days. Tony Cruz got shut out the last two race days. He has 8. John Moore, Tony Millard, and Jimmy Ting both have 7. So that's a look back. This is interesting. Coming up this weekend, which will be Sunday morning, 12:15 East Coast, 9:15. West Coast, there's a 9-race card from Sha Tin, and all the races are on all-weather track. No turf racing at Sha Tin this week, so they're all on the all-weather. And when you use the form guide, which we always recommend, they color-code the all-weather races. So they're very easy to pick out. So if you're looking for a horse's form on all-weather, it's not only in the career box, on the upper right-hand side of the horse's past performances, but they color-code it. So it's very easy to pick out. So you're kind of looking for specialist horses that race at Sha Tin, but run the all-weather regularly and stuff like that. We did see a little trend earlier in this season's meet where Speed did well on the all-weather. Then we had one day where it did not do well, but that track was very wet. And I don't think it behaves like some of our synthetic tracks over here. So that tended to be closing, you know, tiring. So we'll see what the weather is for Sunday. And but all the races are going to be contested on the all-weather track. The only race I'm going to speak about, Steve, is race number 6. This is a class 4, 40-60. They're going 1,200 meters. And there's only a couple of distances that they run on the all-weather. They run 1,200, they run 1,650, and then they run 1,800. The 1,800 is a long run, and then two turns. The 1,200 is one turn. The 1,650 starts near the first turn, so inside posts tend to do their best saving ground. The 1,200 meters, they're looking at the post position data. There's really no advantage to any of the posts. You can be inside, you can be outside. Doesn't necessarily matter. This is a 1,200-meter race. I'm going to go with number 8, Fortune Happiness. Jal Marrera is going to ride. Choice post 6, right in the middle, coming off a nice win. And he's moving up in class. So he's moving from class 5 to class 4 off a nice win last time out. But he gets in towards the bottom of the next class. So he only carries 120 pounds, which I like. He draws well, draws in the middle. He has some tactical speed, not a lot, but hopefully he'll be in the the front 6 instead of the back 6. And he does have a good record at Hong Kong on all-weather racing. His last two starts, in fact, have been on the all-weather track. So we like him. That's number eight, Fortune Happiness. And then a long shot here, and this is a Matthew Poon special. Number four, All Times Grateful. He's a second-time starter, and they started him out at a 1,000-meter sprint. They were just straightaway sprints, and that was our shot 10. And he was rated going into that race at 52, which isn't bad. I'm not quite sure how they rate first-time starters because he didn't have any international form. But he didn't run bad, and he made up some ground. He passed a bunch of horses, finished less than three lengths from the winner. Now he goes out to 1,200. He draws post five. He gets Matthew Poon. So the bigger the price, the better. And I just think when you play these gimmicks over there with the Quinella and the Quinella box, All Times Grateful is the type horse that can just improve enough to sneak in there. And then third, we're going to go with a repeat horse. This horse was a winner for us last time out, Dollar Reward, number two. Has won two races in a row. In handicap racing, that's pretty unusual. So now he has to move up to 130 pounds. He picks up 6 pounds. But he keeps Zach Purton. It's Danny Shum. It's the right connections. And he draws post three. And we'll see what kind of trip he can get from there. So in race six at shot 10, early Sunday morning, race six, 8, 4, and 2. The four is the big price horse.
Very nice. Nice. Well, Dick, let's get a couple of minutes in. We got about five minutes, really. A quick overview for you. When people are looking, we want to concentrate on the turf, Filly and Mare turf and mile. What's a primer, Dick, for the international prep? Whether it's, you know, they come in from Longchamp or British Champions Day, or you know, anything during the summer and fall flat season in Europe. How do you suggest people look at these horses?
I'll give an example. A couple of years ago, when Mendelssohn went to Santa Anita and he won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, I think it was, that was his 10th start of the year. And he had gone off 50-1 in his prior start. He ran second, but he went off a long price. So his form all year was kind of up and down, and he was raced as if they never expected him to be that good. Now, they paid $3 million for him, son of Scat Daddy, so I'm not quite sure why they raced him as early in the year as they did. But my point is, ideally, yeah, you'd like to see a late-developing horse, maybe a couple starts recently, and, you know, timing-wise, the horses are perfectly fit, and they're willing to ship over and take their shot. But I've also seen so many horses that look like they're over the top. They've raced a lot over there, and yet they come over here and, boy, they fired a bullet. The good part about Santa Anita holding this is the ground is predictable, where last year's ground was completely unpredictable. Not only the ground, but the course. You know, the farther out you were in that turf course, the better you did. So not only was it soft and kind of breaking away from the horses, but if you were inside, you could be a soft ground specialist that drew inside and still didn't run well. But that was hard to predict. You could, after watching the races, you could figure it out, but not before when you need to bet. So I like to see possibly some form on good ground. Like if the horse's best race is on soft or heavy, I don't expect them to run particularly well. It's almost like our version of a horse that runs a big race in the slop, and now we're asking them to go on a dry fast track, and that big race might have been an anomaly just due to the track condition. So I'll try to focus on the horses that have form on good track. You're never going to see firm tracks listed in international races, but good is kind of equivalent to our firm. So if you just start with that, look at the good, ignore or discount the soft and the yielding and the occasional heavy that you see, that will narrow your focus down a little bit. Read the comments that they have, on the right-hand side of your past performances. You know, like Friday, the first race, race number five, the first horse, Ali, won a group two with Frankie for Simon Crisford, but the lead is, the common says track lead is headway to challenge over one furlong out, ridden entire last furlong, led last 110 yards. So what you'll see is slowly into stride, held up. Those are the type of horses that aren't going to go anywhere near the front. The horses that are tracking, you might see made all. That means that they went to the front and went wire to wire. You get a little bit of a sense. Without seeing fractional running positions, you get a sense of what style the horse has. And the young European horses are kind of flaky, I'll be nice. And they're not as... It's a weird thing because when at Del Mar, I can't tell you how many horses came out onto the track and just melted down because of the pony. They're not used to having a pony take them to the gate. So O'Brien had that deep impact filly in the first juvenile turf filly race. I can't remember her name. I think it might have been September. And she came out on the track, and the pony comes over towards her, and she starts bucking and going crazy, would not let the pony come near her. And meanwhile, she was expending all this energy. She rallied from 14
to get
point.
Third. It's a tremendous point.
We always think that those horses are so professional. They go to the gate without a pony. Well, the other day, what was the race I was watching the other day? King and Comedy? I mean, completely melted down on the way to the gate at Ascot on Saturday. I mean, to the point where I canceled my bet. I think he unseated Frankie at one point. So they come in the paddock, they yell, they scream, they don't behave very well, and you have to almost ignore that. Now, the young ones, when they get out on the track, if they're not acting well on the track, I'm not crazy about that. The more mature horses, that's just normal for them. So San Anita is not as claustrophobic as Del Mar. They have that saddling area, then they bring them into the parade ring, and then they go out on the track. So they're usually pretty good, but I wouldn't overreact to the older horses acting a little nutty. The younger horses, I might want to see them come out on the track before I make any kind of value judgment about how they're behaving. Theoretically, yes, if the horse is showing speed in Europe, they should come over and adapt to these conditions very well. There's no excuse that you can't. I mean, literally every race now you can find somewhere on replay. The industry's just done a great job at having all these races on replay, workouts available to you, stuff like that. So if you really want to drive yourself nuts, you can watch all that stuff. But as we saw at Ascot last Saturday, the ground is so important. And now we're going to get firm ground, and you have to figure Aiden O'Brien and Simon Crisford and all the people who are shipping horses over, plan ahead, knowing, well, this horse will run well on good ground. This horse will take these conditions very well. The tight turns may or may not be a problem, but that's rarely an issue. And we've also seen, despite Santa Anita being a longer ship for the Europeans, their record at San Anita has just been
tremendous. Very good. Yeah.
So firm ground, tight turns, that doesn't seem to bother them. So just obviously a lot to look at. And what I would do from now until they actually draw the races with the actual fields, just get familiar with the horses that you aren't familiar with. Just, you know, do some replay work. The RacingPost.com has really good information where you put in the horse's name in the search box, and it'll pull up that horse, and then you click on that, and it gives you his races, and you pull up each race and see how they run with lots of comments on the races, things like that. I use that all the time with international-type horses. So lots of tools, lots of information. It's not like the old days where, you know, you might have heard about West Tycoon or someone like that, but you didn't really know much. It was just kind of like an act of faith that you heard this horse can run, but you didn't really know much more. Now you're getting just tremendous information on these shippers, and there seems to be quite a few of them.
Well, and we're anxious to get some decisions announced from, particularly from Ballydoyle, because it was the one thing that jumped at me yesterday as they were announcing the fields, and Nick Tamaro is going to join us now, and Nick and I are going to walk through the pre-entries. The one thing that I was stunned by were all these extraneous O'Brien entrants that hadn't been on any IRB list. I mean, they had after British Champions Day, they came out with, you know, the expected horses, and then they're in every, you know, in every logical spot, O'Brien popped not just one in some cases, but two, particularly with the older horses. It was one thing when it came to the juveniles, but I was stunned. And then this morning, there is some nattering. Got Nick Luck actually doing some skullduggery to see if what might be rumor and what might be meat on the bone about who might not be coming. So it feels like there's going to be, over the next couple of days, there'll be some interesting developments. Dick, we'll have, when we talk next week, we will have the fields set up so we can make some official decisions. I appreciate it as always.
Okay, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Dick Powell, everybody, and HKJC, HKJC Racing, Twitter and Hong Kong Jockey Club, everything on the form guide to give you some tools to get some at Shot 10 Saturday. Let's stay right here. Nick Tamaro, who has been on the go, whether it was Keeneland and elsewhere. We haven't had a chance to talk to Nick, so it's great to connect. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. I wanted to call you because I knew that this would be a great way to distract your mind away from anything that happened at Minute Maid Stadium over the last couple of days.
It has not been a good start, safe to say. I did not end well last night. But look, I mean, they've been completely outplayed in two games. There's no quibbling about it. You can bitch about them not scoring with runners, hitting with runners in scoring position, but when you make errors in the field and you don't pitch as well as you've been, it happens. And they didn't play well really against the Yankees and still were able to win that series. So I have a feeling that if the Astros win game three, there's actually a relatively decent chance they can win this series. I just don't have a great feeling they're going to win game three.
Well, the important thing for people in Houston, go buy those mattresses now, folks. Go buy that betting set while the window is open, because Mac, I don't know, right? What is the offer exactly that if they don't win?
So you pay for your mattress, and if they win, he reimburses your purchase. So that's why he keeps betting. So he's trying to accumulate the money to pay off the purchases. The people who are getting the reimbursement. So if they lose, basically what happens for Mac is that he breaks even. So he still has the revenue from the mattress sales and he's out all the money that he bet. But if they win, he pays off the mattress purchases and probably at this point has bet so much that he would make a little bit of money. Now, he had to take some disgracefully low prices on them over the last month or so, including 2.2 to 1 before the playoffs started, which sucks. But hey, if he liked 2.2 to 1 at that point, he can get about 2.4 to 1 that they'll win the series right now.
Well, I think after game one, he actually went back in. I saw where Darren Rubble put out a thing where I think he bet another $600,000.
Yeah, I think at this point, I think what he's doing most successfully is providing some unbelievable marketing for all kinds of rinky-dink sports books that exist around the country. So he really is owed. He's a master marketer, no doubt about it. You just don't ever know who he's really going to help. But, I mean, there are tickets popping up, and people are thinking, Jesus, I had no idea that there was a casino there. So that's the man of the people.
It's unbelievable. It's very, very funny. We'll take a look, Nick. Let's walk through the pre-entries together and get just, you know, some of your early gut reactions. And I saw, you know, yesterday you sent out a couple of tweet flares as the fields were being announced, some things that struck you. And let's do that. We've got this juvenile sprint that ended up with more Europeans than expected.
Yeah, and I guess this is a race that's going to be pretty well supported by the Euros over the years. We've now seen 2 years in a row they've participated pretty heavily, and this was the biggest field drawn by far. And, you know, turf sprints are equalizers. So I think that Kamari and or four-wheel drive, both from Wesley Ward's setup, look like they're going to take a lot of beating. I've really not dug into the Euros yet, but I think we've seen horses, including Dr. Simpson, that are coming out of big races across the pond. And he feels like a horse, looks like a horse that actually has some speed, too. Because clearly this 5/8 at Santa Anita is going to be a very... It's very different, obviously, than 5.5 at Churchill or maybe 5 anywhere else. It's going to be really geared towards a horse that's pretty fleet of foot out of the gate and can get themselves into position.
Well, that Ali for Simon Crisford feels like a horse. I mean, that was a buzz horse, going into the entries. And he also entered Al Raya, and they both made it into the field. Just looking at Ali, who's a Society Rock colt, coming out of the group two, the Flying Childers, ran okay in the Prix Mornay at DeVille, feels like the top Euro. And, then there's a few we're going to have to learn about, like Band Practice, who's coming in off a three-race win streak, including a win at Shanti over soft going. He's actually won over all different kinds of going. Joseph O'Brien's got Alligator Alley sitting as the first horse in off the exclusion list, also coming out of the Flying Childers, well in arrears of Ali. Dr. Simpson for Thomas Dascombe. Who else? That Dream Shot we didn't expect in here from James Tate, coming out of behind Dr. Simpson. In fact, those two together at Dundalk, and also had actually run a good race behind in the Flying Childers behind Ali. So, if he's the goods, then I think you got some horses to kind of spin off from him.
No doubt, and I think that one of the things that will come up in conversation probably between us now and certainly over the next couple of weeks is that you want fast ground horses, and this is a horse that very clearly, based on his form, has run poorly on soft turf and well on firm turf. So I think those are the ones that you want to upgrade. Clearly, one of the differences between a Santa Anita or Del Mar Breeders' Cup and anywhere else is that you're certain that you're going to get firm ground, and there are definitely trainers that look for that as well. I remember getting on the train at Monmouth in 2007 and saying to one of the Irishmen that was next to me as we were boarding the train about Dylan Thomas, I said, well, isn't he okay on soft ground? And he said, oh, lad, they all come here looking for firm ground. So that's something I've tried to keep in mind over the years, and I think we'll see a lot of that this year for sure.
Let's also fold in the betting menu so you can get a feel for what's going on. The Juvenile Turf Sprint, the first of the weekend, and that'll go off at 4:12 Eastern. And it is the last leg of the early pick five on Friday. The other races will be a pair of allowances and then the two Calbred races, the Golden State Cal program that goes as the third and the fourth, and then the Juvenile Turf is the anchor leg of the early pick five and also of an early pick four. It is not part of the late action that then starts with the Juvenile Turf, and there's an all juvenile pick four that starts with the Juvenile Turf, the order after the sprint: Juvenile Turf, Juvenile Fillies, Juvenile Fillies Turf, and the Juvenile, and then the Marathon is the nightcap on Friday. So the pick five is the Juvenile Turf, the Juvenile Fillies on the main, Juvenile Fillies on the grass, Juvenile Boys on the main, and the Marathon. That's your pick five. Let's talk about the Juvenile Turf, and this is a group, and I'm doing like three things at once, Nick, trying to look at my some of my other information, specifically at Santa Anita, and who has historically done well in here. Certainly we know that the O'Brien runners like Arizona, one place to start, and you look at instructor for Chad Brown. There's the pair that comes out of Keeneland and the Bourbon. A lot of people are excited about betting Vitalogy back, who was motoring late for Brendan Walsh.
Yeah, this is a race that generally has been a little more geared towards Euros. Of course, Chad Brown's kind of dominated the Juvenile Fillies turf, and that's why it's been a little more tilted towards Americans. But this actually looks like a really fascinating race and might be one of the most enjoyable from a betting perspective of the entire weekend. And I say that because I think the domestic horses, I mean, in my opinion, the domestic horses are headed by Structor. And I know some people may think that Peace Achieved is as decorated or perhaps better than Structor, but I thought Structor's win in the Pilgrim was outstanding. One thing that it's worth keeping in mind when looking at these races and looking at turf races for the entire two cards is that there was this happens most years, but there was a decided inside bias on the Widener turf course over the first 4 weeks of the Belmont Fall Meet. And Structor raced outside the entire way. We saw a lot of horses swimming on the outside of that turf course as time went by. This is an angle that also produced a horse like Uncle Benny last year that barely lost the Juvenile Turf while not really enjoying a good trip at all at Churchill. So I think Structor is very, very strong and will be a major player. And I think the Aidan O'Brien horses that are coming over, maybe Safe Fort Myers, both Arizona and Royal Dornock look like very nice horses. Obviously, Arizona's had the misfortune of running into Pinatubo a couple of times, and Pinatubo looks like he might be the next great thing. So I would imagine that Arizona will be a major player, and these are horses that generally are pretty impervious to any kind of draw. They're all going to more or less drop out and make one run. Arizona does have a little bit of speed, so he can be kind of tactically placed. So I'm looking forward to this. Decorated Invader, I think, is a very nice horse. You mentioned Vitalogy, who came with a great run last time with a fast pace to run into. We'll see what he does maybe without that greatest setup. So, yeah, this contention really runs deep in here. And Arizona Instructor may end up running 1-2, but they may do it at 3-1 and 7-2 or so, and that's going to make for still a great betting opportunity.
You know who may be kind of overlooked just, you know, by virtue of what we've talked about already? Decorated Invader.
Yeah, he might. I mean, the West Point people are certainly not going to overlook him betting-wise. But, yeah, I mean, he's when you win, you know, winning races like the Summer or Natalma coming into the Breeders' Cup is sort of like being the guy that posts a number and then sits in the clubhouse at a golf tournament. You know, people tend to forget that you've done your deed already. And Decorated Invader was very impressive in that particular race. Seems like a horse that can win on any type of turf course. And I would see no reason to take a negative stance on him. He feels like the type that will certainly give a good account of himself.
We should mention that it was interesting. George Papapodromo and Bruce Kretz cross-entered American Theorem. And I assume he's going to run in the juvenile and not here. And if he does that, as expected, that gets Billy Batts into the field, third in the Zuma Beach, behind Hit the Road and also War Beast, who both make it into the field. So Billy Batts would get in, and Rusty Arnold has got Gear Jockey kind of sitting then on the doorstep, who ran a fairly competitive and even race in the Bourbon. So if Gear Jockey gets in, and if you like Peace Achieved and Vitalogy, and Gear Jockey gets in, maybe he's an exotics consideration underneath as well. It feels like Proven Strategies is kind of on the outside looking in for the greens. He'd be third on the AE list and is, of course, still a maiden, although he's run very well and for the most part in his four tries. The juvenile turf, that gets us to the main track and the juvenile fillies. And as you noted, Nick, yesterday, I saw that tweet. And I queried this last week when talking to Dave Grenig and Dave and Jay Pridman, who are covering the juvenile and the juvenile fillies. How can we have all these two-year-old dirt races from April till October and not have full fields for these two races?
It blows my mind. I mean, it's unbelievable to me that there will be more horses going postward. Will have been more horses that went postered in the Alcibiades than will go postered in the Juvenile Fillies. I understand, and actually somebody did point out to me that this has happened before. It actually happened in 2012 at Santa Anita, that both juvenile races did not draw fields bigger than nine. And so it has happened. But, you know, the sort of gradual, I don't even know if the phase out is the right word, or continued degradation of the dirt graded stakes program in this country is a real problem. And I hope that people that will commit their respective racing offices to dirt racing again reach positions of prominence. I can think of one I'd like to, and that really turns around. So it's unfortunate to see. I mean, that being said, this is a good field, and
yeah,
we've got some very nice horses. You know, major winners of the big preps around the country, obviously being the Oak Leaf and or whatever it's called now, and the Alcibiades and Frisette. And I think one thing when you dig into this race a little bit, and I've really probably spent more time on this race than any race so far, is that there's a pretty good amount of speed. And I think the conclusion a lot of people are going to reach is the one that I did, which is that if British Idiom can rate like she did in the Alcibiades, she's going to be very, very tough to beat. I know,
yeah,
Bass dealt with a slow pace last time, but, I mean, talk about a controlled trip and setup, sitting right on top of that pace against what probably is a relatively suspect bunch. I don't think she quite classes up to British Idiom in terms of the way she really, really ripped apart that field at Keeneland. So I think she's going to be very tough to beat. I think this is a situation, too, where you may get a relatively decent price because Wicked Whisper's got the fast buyer figure, and Bast obviously has Bob Baffert and some name recognition. You know, it might not be more than 3-1 or 7-2, but I could see British Idiom becoming a horse that I base a pretty decent amount of wagers on the Friday card on.
Doesn't KP Dreamin' get a better setup in this spot than she did in the Chandelier?
Yeah, KP Dreamin' and Perfect Alibi probably both do. And I don't know what the jockey assignments are going to end up being, but I'd love to see Irad get back on Perfect Alibi. He's more of a skilled, off-the-pace type of jockey, whereas his brother is a little bit better on the front end. And so I'd like to see both just drop out and make one run, and I think either are very strong placing chances. And if this thing gets particularly quick, which is very much in the realm of possibility, I could see one of them jumping up and winning.
The one horse that we should include, too, that we is a bit of a mystery on the stretch out, is Donna Veloce, who, you know, it literally is the definition of any kind. Who knows what you got there?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I knew we were going to get to a point eventually where horses were running in these races off of a maiden win, and her maiden win was very impressive. If you're a Timeform US user, that was a slow pace, and she dominated it on the front end. She was expected to, obviously, being 3-5. I think there's no doubt she's got a ton of talent, but this looks like a little too much too soon. That being said, she's going to make her presence known because at the very least, she should show a good bit of speed.
Ended up with a overflow field for the juvenile fillies turf, and this group, I don't know. My favorite thing so far, looking at the early presentation, is having the trainer of Cristal listed as John Kimmel, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. that made me smile. John Kimmel, DVM. And this is a group where I got to dig in. I mean, obviously we saw the domestic players like Sweet Melania and Selflessly, etc. Fair Maiden, who we talked to Owen Hardy about early on. Cristal was plenty celebrated over the summer. You know, Eddie Keneally with Abscond. We're going to have to familiarize ourselves with the Euros.
Yeah, that's going to be a real feat here, too. It's going to be a little tougher, I think, than probably any other race to familiarize yourselves. Also because we're dealing with a small number of running lines. And you take a situation with a horse like Albina and Daye have run against each other before, most recently two back in the Moyglare Stud at the Cura. And on that particular day, Daye was better, and then Albina came back and won a Group 1 at Longchamp on the Art card. Now, how much she was helped by the soft going that day, that's what remains to be seen. We know Flaxman and that entire operation is very astute in terms of sending the right horses over to America, and obviously had a banner day in 2014 winning with Main Sequence and Caracanti. But I would tend to favor Daye. I think Roger Varian is one of the very sneaky Euro trainers in terms of the quality of horses he's sent over the years. And that's one thing that you're going to want to do, which is get as familiar as you can with European trainers that have had success over here, even if it's not simply in the Breeders' Cup, but at any point. And that this looks to me like a situation where Daye might be set up very, very well and might be a horse that prefers faster ground. One of the things that I've been told and obviously am noticing and looking at these horses is there's been a ton of wet weather in Europe for the last month and a half or so. So we might see some really dirty running lines on horses most recently that are looking to get to firm ground. I love betting Europeans like that. The Europeans that I've always gravitated to are ones that have been on the wrong kind of ground, are getting to the right kind. And that this doesn't happen quite as much in the Breeders' Cup. It happens more so throughout the year. Horses that look like they may have bled that are now getting LASIK. So be really cautious about some of those bad running lines. Don't dismiss them too easily and try and familiarize yourself as much as possible. Now, having offered you that soliloquy, this race looks like a total grab bag. I mean, there are a number of horses domestically that have run well. Selflessly, obviously, stepped up in a big way to win the Miss Grillo. I thought that Sharing was an impressive maiden winner at Saratoga. Obviously, is more of a turf horse and ran great in the Salima. Sweet Melania's Jessamine was outstanding. So we've got a really good local contingent, a domestic contingent. And the two that I mentioned, Daye and Albina, look like the main players from Europe. And you can throw Cristal into that domestic bunch. So this is another one. These two-year-old turf races really have taken off for the Breeders' Cup and look like they're going to provide some of the most interesting races of the whole weekend.
Well, and to glance at the juvenile filly turf races at Santa Anita to familiarize yourself with who's won this. Chad won it with New Money Honey in 2016. This was Catch a Glimpse's coming out party. Actually, that was at Keeneland. I take that back. Lady Eli in 2014. Chrysillium. That won it for Charlie Hills in 2013. Flotilla for Miguel Delzon, that was in 2012. And, of course, Tappet's Fly for Dale and Frank Jones. And famously for Chad Brown is big spotlight win with Marum going back to 2008. So it's been pretty well distributed between Euro and domestic players when we're at Santa Anita.
Yeah, obviously, Chad's won four of the last five of these. You know, this is not, obviously, you're not going to put Selflessly on the level of a horse like Newspaper of Record or Rushing Fall, but I did think her Miss Grillo was a very, very strong effort. Felt like a horse that was going to stretch out well, and she did so. One other horse that I think I'd be remiss in not mentioning is Fair Maiden, and Fair Maiden is going to be overlooked by a lot of people based on the Natalma. When she came into the Natalma, looking like she might end up being a short price in a race like the Juvenile Fillies Turf, I think Flavian Proud would have liked to have that one back. I think there's also a chance that some distance limitations were exposed that day, despite having a pedigree that would lead you to believe she'll run all day. So I'm going to give Fair Maiden another shot. I'm hopeful that she draws towards the inside and can save some ground, because she kind of swam outside when ridden a little too confidently. But talk about an interesting horse and one that really has already shown in a brief career that she's got the ability to just deep six this field if she runs back to some of those big efforts.
Turn to the feature for Friday, last leg of the All Stakes, All Juvenile Stake Pick 4, and it's the juvenile. And here, obviously, you've got headliners that, you know, to be honest, Nick, maybe it would have made other, you know, added entrants extraneous. When you've got Dennis's Moment, Eight Rings, Maxfield, together for starters, and then, you know, a very nice set, you know, right behind those three. I don't know how much more we needed, frankly.
Yeah, it's super top heavy, and that's fine. It's a good group of the elites, so to speak. I didn't get to say this before, but I'll say it now since he's entered in both. I'm so hopeful that Billy Batts gets a grade one at some point so he can go to stud and I can buy one of his progeny and name him Go Home and Get Your Shine Box. that this is like a real passion of mine, almost like a passion project. So that being said, all kidding aside, yeah, the elites in here look really, really good. And that reminds you a little bit of 2016 when we saw horses like Classic Empire and Not This Time come together. And they just look like they're probably a little bit better than everybody else in the field. Maxfield was outstanding winning the Breeders' Futurity and probably should benefit from a relatively strong pace. I mean, backers of Maxfield are going to hope that American Theorem, that they stick with their plan, which is that the preference is this race, and that he's in here to juice up the pace and maybe force Eight Rings along a little bit because, I mean, at least on paper, it looks as if Eight Rings is going to get loose in here, and that will make him very, very tough. We've obviously seen that Bob Baffert has dominated this race on numerous occasions, and I would expect Eight Rings to be to take a lot of beating, and that we'll undoubtedly see, aside from those that maybe hope that Tis the Law is the one, I think the long-range Kentucky Derby favorite will come out of here. I think Dennis's Moment is the best horse in the race. I don't know if he'll necessarily win because he might have to deal with a negative setup, but I'm interested to see how things shake out between those two, Maxfield, and even the second-tier types that you referenced, like a horse like Scabbard.
Scabbard, absolutely, and to a lesser extent, maybe Shoplifted. Storm the Court is kind of obscured slightly. The Peter Urton, after being involved in the fiasco down at Del Mar in the Del Mar Futurity, was obviously was affected, but then came back and ran okay in his two turn debut, and I'm anxious to get out to California and see him a little bit. I'm intrigued by Storm the Court. He's sort of my oddball entity in there. I will mention, by the way, because I did do this work because I got curious. Sal Kumin involved in Eight Rings and in the girls' race. He's involved with British Idiom and Comical, as well as Andesite. It looks like Miss J. McKay is going to be hard-pressed to get into the juvenile turf sprint. But on Friday, Kumin with Andesite, British Idiom, Comical, and Eight Rings. And then into Saturday, Shecky Shabazz, who's outside looking in, Whitmore, who's on the fence, Coldfront, Landeskog, Uni, Bowie's Hero, Midnight Bisou, and Yoshita. Sal Kumin, they're going to install an escalator from the boxes, maybe to the winner's circle, for Sal on the weekend.
Bringing a new style of ownership, the one where you actually don't own the horse until it runs and you buy in.
Well, it seems to be working.
He's an action guy. It's fine.
Well, and a lot of fun. Let's look at Saturday, a quick lineup idea so you get a feel for what we're dealing with. The early pick five starts with the sequence of stakes leading into the filly and mare sprint and the turf sprint. Those are the fourth and fifth legs of the pick five. There's a pick four that starts in race two and then utilizes the filly and mare sprint and the turf sprint. There's a middle pick four, filly and mare sprint, turf sprint, dirt mile, and filly and mare turf. There's another interim pick four of the dirt mile, the filly and mare turf, the sprint, and the mile. Then there's the pick five, the all Breeders' Cup pick five of the sprint, the mile, the distaff, the turf, and the classic. And then, of course, the late pick four, the mile, the distaff, the turf, and the classic. Let's start with the filly and mare sprint, Nick. And Kafefi's going to be, even with the presence of Come Dancing, it feels like Kafefi's one of the shortest prices of the weekend.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and it's a very intriguing lineup, I would say, because the situation that Kafefi is going to find herself dealing with is that there's a lot of speed in this race, and between Selcourt and Danuska's My Girl and Kafefi herself, and it feels like Heaven Has My Nikki is in this race for one reason, which is to try and go to the lead. And, when you stack all that against each other, even in a place like Santa Anita, where obviously having speed is a big weapon, that's going to be tough. And that's going to make things really hard on her. So I don't know how much it'll help Come Dancing, because Come Dancing kind of wants to be forwardly placed too. So, you know, without committing myself to anything, I could see myself really taking long looks at horses like Dawn the Destroyer and Spice Perfection, who ran 1-2 in the TCA, and at 7 furlongs are probably both going to be in a little bit better position than they were at 6, and are each coming off of excellent efforts at Keeneland. So I think this might be an opportunity to bet against the favorites. Come Dancing is a horse that obviously on her best days has been outstanding. She's been extremely impressive. She trains great, so all of the buzz is going to be really through the roof with her. But, you know, lugging in and looking a little goofy last time for an oft-injured horse doesn't really inspire a ton of confidence. With all due respect to Carlos Martin, who's an underrated trainer, you're talking about this, you know, relatively ouchy horse taking a cross-country trip to run against a good field in a pace-laden race. I'd be willing to take a stand against it. So I would say keep your options open. Obviously, Dawn the Destroyer is not a huge winning type, but she just might be the kind of horse that falls into a really favorable trip here.
Yeah, and there is one horse that kind of jumped in at the quarter pole, and that's Peter Miller with Rockingham and Dave Burson's Mosey Cow, a horse that they claimed from Paul Redham and Doug O'Neill back in June of last year. And you know, it's gone slightly forward as a four-year-old. You know, did run a very nice allowance race stretching to a mile, so it would be a turn back if she was to run here. She is also pace and is cross-entered in the distaff, so if she goes here, she adds to the pace scenario and frankly adds to the, you know, to the pace in either way, either place that she goes. So this is a horse that, you know, we really didn't expect in the entry box. The horse I should bring up, I suppose, here that is going to be completely obscured and dirtied up, Bella Fina on the turn back.
Yeah, you know, I want to make a case for her, but she, you know, there's a lot that makes sense about Bella Fina, right? I mean, this is her home track. I love cutbacks. She's a sprinter. You know, we've always known all along that all the route races ultimately needed to just be overlooked. And there was a little bit of a sign of life early in the Cotillion. Obviously, that setup was never going to be favorable for her. But she just seems like a horse that peaked. And that's my concern, is that you're probably asking her to harken back to something that's just a little bit beyond what she can get to. However, I don't think that I'm going to find myself losing completely to a horse like Bella Fina, and you're going to get a pretty favorable price. So if she ends up drawing outside and you know, can avoid getting kind of buried on the rail trying to find her way to knife through horses, she seems like one that you could maybe take 15, 20 to 1 on.
Let's move to the turf sprint. Nick Tamura with us. We're doing a walkthrough of our initial gut feel, looking at the pre-entries. And my gut feel looking at the turf sprint is that there's a bunch of horses that probably aren't going to get in that would have run had this been down the hill. And the first casualty of the decision to not use the 6.5 furlong course is this race that is limited to a dozen. And it's just ridiculous. If Final Frontier and Checky Shabazz, you know, they don't get a chance to run in here, it's really, I don't know. That was the first thing that irked me when I was going through this.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not gonna, I love the Breeders' Cup and I understand a little bit of the decision-making process, but this is a crappy race if 5 furlongs on the turf. You know, it's just, it's not an equalizer. It actually minimizes the chances of a lot of horses that could have been really effective in it. So, you know, I'm not really dying to bet it. One thing I'll say is that you probably want to concentrate a lot of your attention on horses that have been effective at 5/8 on, you know, 5/8 races on 7 furlong turf courses. And so, I mean, I think you're left with some combo of probably Pure Sensation and Primus and Eddie Haskell. I guess Belvoir Bay a little bit too. Obviously, Pure Sensation having that speed is a great asset. I'm going to upgrade whoever Joel Rosario ends up riding, because I think he rides turf sprints better than anybody in America. and which I suppose could end up being Stubbins. I don't know. But, yeah, it's unfortunate. It's would have been, this is a great race down the hill. I know that that's obviously a different conversation, but I don't really see myself getting involved in it, and I'm glad that it's kind of, unfortunately, it's going to be the last leg of the early pick five on Saturday, and I'll probably try to be as cautious as possible early so that I can use a few horses, because it just doesn't really get my pulse racing.
Now, and the horse that that needs a some sort of a defection, and unless Ohm ends up, I don't see it. Somebody's going to have to, you know, cough or come up with an issue. Final Frontier. I was looking forward to betting when we got here, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a Final Frontier fan. You know, I was one of the buffoons that was on him at 25.5-1 when he got disqualified last year at Saratoga, and think he's really coming into his own now. And I also feel like he's the kind of horse that, even though he sat on top of a relatively, you know, a moderate pace last time, at least if you're a Timeform US user, he's the kind that could drop back and make one run. So, I'm not a big 5-furlong turf sprint player whenever they come up around the country. So I'm not going to, I would like to see him get in. I'd like to see Shecky Shabazz get in too, just so that there was a little bit more pace. But you know, it's a race. I think that it will definitely be my lowest handle of the weekend.
And you're BCing, no? You're doing the contest?
Yes,
of course.
Yes.
Let's turn to the Dirt Mile, and Dirt Mile starts the middle pick four with the Filly and Mare Turf, the sprint, and the mile. And this is, you know, this is another issue. And I saw you took a nice swing at the Dirt Mile yesterday.
I wish this race would just be eradicated. I really do. And I'm not going to go on a big rant about it, but there is no place in American racing for a two-turn mile. There are no big two-turn miles. It is not a race with any significance at all, and all it's doing is cannibalizing two staples of this event. And that's all I'll say. I guess Improbable is going to be pretty tough. I thought that he obviously had everything go against him in the Pennsylvania Derby. He needs to get out of the gate. Maybe Bejarano, who's a pretty well-known gate rider, will help with that. I'm thrilled to see Omaha Beach back, but I'd like to see Omaha Beach in the Classic. So, you know, it's going to be a fun race because there are some good horses in it. But and Mr. Money's a good horse. I think that people are going to probably hold the Pennsylvania Derby against him, thinking that he should have won given that pace setup. But he did have some internal fractions in there that were pretty strong. He established a slow pace and obviously couldn't seal the deal. The mile fits him a little bit better. Spunda Run's a really nice horse, too. So anybody who's sleeping on him needs to be careful. He probably needed the seasoning when he ran in the Pennsylvania Derby, obviously got it, and then came back and just absolutely destroyed that field at Parks against Weaker. So I'm interested to see how it shakes out. This is a race where I don't see myself really digging into it and finding somebody I want to bet all that badly. But it's going to pair up a lot of good horses doing, I guess, the thing that they want. You know, it would be a different ballgame around one turn. One turn miles on the dirt in this country are big deals. Two turn miles on the dirt in this country are not.
One horse that is sitting on a decision, and I talked to Ron McQuett earlier this morning. Whitmore will work tomorrow, and then Ron will put the heads together with Sol Kumin and Bob LaPenta and the Southern Springs team and make a decision about whether Whitmore will come west for either the Dirt Mile or the sprint. And certainly he's going to get plenty of pace if he wants to run there. And Ron is really on the fence. He says he's doing great, though, Whitmore, and the plan, you know, had been to, you know, kind of get him ready for the, you know, the back half of the season, and here he is. So we'll see what they do. There's also a decision that needs to be made about how to judge Blue Chipper, the Korean runner that is here and was bred by Diamond A, went to Korea and has amassed a 7-for-8 record. You know, the interesting horse. He's 1-for-1 at a mile. He's done mostly sprinting, and of course, you know, they've got the dirt program at in Korea. He'll be the mystery horse in here.
No doubt about it. And I mean, if Ron Moquette or his son, who is a nice kid, and I talk to him on Twitter sometimes, or listening, Whitmore needs to be in the sprint. Whitmore is not going to be effective around two turns at Santa Anita. This is a race that is almost every running of it at Santa Anita has been dominated on the front end, save maybe the win 3 years ago from the Kira McLaughlin horse, whose name I can't remember, who raced in Dubai. This is a race that is going to be, it's almost always won on the front end at Santa Anita, and it's going to be very, very hard, especially with stalking types like Omaha Beach and Improbable in here for a deep closer to win. And I know 6 furlongs on the dirt's not a great setup for a horse like Whitmore either, but he's going to get some pace in there and can maybe just come with that one run. Blue Chipper is a question mark, obviously. So too are Ambassadorial and the Treflor, who are on the excluded list, but will probably find themselves getting in because of the number of horses that actually have first preference in other races than the Dirt Mile. So, it's at least combine some interesting types like that in what should be what does, like I said, it pits a few good horses against each other and at kind of a different distance.
Well, and Catalina Cruiser, running in the sprint, we know that, and so that opens up a slot for Snapper Sinclair, who can go on either surface. Trey Flores would be next, and Hog Creek Hustle cross-entered as well with first preference in the sprint, and I didn't even realize that Firenze Fire had cross-entered here as well. Firenze Fire, another one. And Diamond Oops, we reached out last week to Patrick Biancone, and what a fascinating season and career Patrick is fashioning with Diamond Oops, who can do anything, it seems.
He's an interesting horse. I thought his Shadwell Turf Mile was outstanding.
Yes,
and
it was.
And watching the replay back a few times, You realize, and I realize, holy cow, that was Diamond Oops still hanging in there.
Yep.
So, he's an interesting horse. He's one that feels like he might be able to sit a little bit off of it and get a piece of this thing at a big price.
The Filly and Mare Turf, the whole card. It's the end of that first Breeders' Cup Pick Four, the Filly and Mare Sprint, the Turf Sprint, the Dirt Mile, and then the Filly and Mare Turf. And it's in the middle of the second Pick Four, Dirt Mile, Filly and Mare Turf, Sprint, and Mile. And obviously, this starts with Sister Charlie. And one of the things I was hinting at it earlier in the show, there apparently is some a little bit of a suggestion that Magical may turn out to not be participating, and that would change a bunch of things, including a horse like Mississippi, who was going to run in the turf, but if Magical doesn't come, Mississippi would run here. So there's some fluidity, it seems, to the Filly and Mare Turf, but the conversation starts with Sister Charlie.
It does, and obviously if Magical runs here, she's the second part of the conversation. I think the most important part of the conversation with Sister Charlie is whether you're of the opinion that the Flower Bowl is indicative of who she is at this point, because quite honestly, her Flower Bowl was not particularly impressive. And the thing that they've done with Thais, and that they're going to do again here, even though Murth is in here to ensure some pace, is they've basically made it so that Sister Charlie has to run a little quicker early just to stay in the same zip code as her rabbit. And they're kind of defeating the purpose of having a rabbit by having one horse run off by 12 lengths. It's gotten to be a little silly. And I've been underwhelmed. I was underwhelmed by Sister Charlie's last race. I did not think she ran particularly well. I think that she is capable of better and has certainly run better. And there are some interesting horses from overseas. And Villa Marina won the Prix de l'Opera, which has been a big-time prep for this race over the years. I know that enthusiasts of French racing would not like me calling that race a prep. But she ran very well and feels like a horse that can be as effective on firm turf. Probably does prefer a little cut in the ground, but has been effective on firm turf. And obviously you're looking at a horse, in addition to Magical, if Magical ends up here, like Villas Van Broek, who won the Sun Chariot and has a little bit of early speed. So, I think there are some alternatives. And I think if you want to take a critical approach of Sister Charlie, then I think it's a decent time to. I hate that basically the rest of the domestic contingent has more or less, at this point, just conceded the race to Sister Charlie. There's basically nobody else in there that runs domestically. Maybe it's just frustration with her and this division. So thanks to Little Red Feather for running Mirth, and hopefully Grand Motion gets a chance to run Mississippi, who I would actually be just as inclined to bet in this race as Sister Charlie, and could end up seeing myself do that.
There's a horse in here that reminds me of the situation from 3 years ago, which ended up being a bonanza personally, and that is that Lady Eli was, there was emotion attached, obviously, to Lady Eli's run here in 2016, and Queen's Trust for Shiverly Park and Sir Michael, that race sticks in my mind looking at this, and the horse I'll mention that we really don't know what she might be is this Fanny Logan for John Gosden. And I asked Nick Luck the other day about her, if she was coming, and his thoughts. And this is a horse that has got that same look that Queen's Trust had coming in to the filly and mare turf.
Right, and this is another thing, going back to that conversation about trainers, I mean, obviously, a guy like John Gosden, you want to take multiple looks at anything he sends over. He's very astute, very sharp, and these types are often a lot of fun to bet in these scenarios, because this is a horse that, I mean, probably 5 months ago, they couldn't have dreamt of running in the Breeders' Cup, and now she's won four races in a row, one sort of more impressively than the next, while passing every class test. And you're looking at what's going to be a pretty square price. So absolutely, my best piece of advice at this point is in handicapping: do not concede this race to Sister Charlie. This is not simply going to be a scenario where she goes through the motions, and she might not even be as good as she was last year. And don't forget that it took every bit of that Churchill Downs stretch for her to get there last year. So there are some real alternatives, and we should entertain each one.
Well, and if Magical does not come, that leaves Fleeting as Coolmore's player, and you know she's coming in off that not so rosy trip in the filly and mare on Saturday in the British Champions, and she's kept nice company. And frankly, the fact that Villa Marina beat her, that's a horse that I think people are going to need to look twice at as well. Villa Marina for Carlos Lafont Parier.
Absolutely. Yep. Just a question there of if you think she's as effective on firm turf as she is on kind of bottomless ground, but she's a horse with a lot of talent, no doubt about it.
Well, and, you know, yeah, I mean, she was fourth, beaten two in the pre-Vermeil, but that was on firm. But I don't know. I'm not going to hold that against her. And, you know, going back, by the way, you mentioned the four in a row for Fanny Logan. She's 5 for 5 at 10 furlongs, which, you know, If you're looking for a distance specialist, there it is for a three-year-old filly. Nick, let's pull up here, and we'll save the late pick five, the sprint, the mile, the distaff, the turf, and the classic for tomorrow when we're going to talk about a very good Belmont card.
Sounds like a plan.
Is that good?
That sounds great.
All right. Nick Tamaro, everybody, with basically two-thirds of the first look at the Breeders' Cup weekend. We'll do the last five, the sprint, the mile, the distaff, the turf, and the classic. And as I told you at the beginning of the show, all force out, all multi-race wagers, and the jackpot high five sequence, if it's still carrying, everything pays out by the classic, with the classic. No holdover pots. They're not going to hold your money. So, FYI. 90 minutes in, and we're flying along. Steve Haskin is going to join us next. Steve's excited with his initial thoughts about the Breeders' Cup. We've also got to get to, well, I can tell we're in trouble already. Seth Merrow, Rich Eng, and, well, Tony, I don't know if Tony's listening. Tony, send me a text if you're listening. We'll see about Tony today. All right. Back after this, second half at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sermon Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you're dressing up, still it's not enough. Who you trying to impress, man?
We're back in the races. Yeah, we're getting ready to get this kitchen renovation going. So Tina and I, over the weekend, we took off all the old cabinetry and all that, stripped everything down, and took up the old laminate floor that I put in, I don't know, that's 20 years ago. I've been here 20 years in this house. And so now, though, the kitchen is, you know, bereft, and I have to go to the basement. I put the coffee pot and the Keurig down in the basement. So when I have to go get a cup of coffee now, I got to go down. You know, from Steve, you can appreciate it. Steve's been to the house. I got to go through the kitchen and down into the basement. So that's where if the music was playing longer than expected, that's why.